This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being. Neijing is the concept that taking medicines for an illness is like digging a well when thirsty. Neijing Now, placing and taking responsibility for the health of the individual and the planet. From molecular biology to global ecology, from political, social, economics to psychology and spirituality. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, empowering host resistance. We can be found on the web at neijingnow.org. neijingnow.org. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chandler, and I welcome you to another edition of Exploring Neijing Now. In this issue, we speak with Sergeant Paul Pietruski of the Stevens Point, Wisconsin Police Department.
We can change the laws and we can punish people who violate the laws, but that hasn't stopped the behavior.
Detective Ostrowski of Portage County, Wisconsin Sheriff's Department.
I think it'd probably still be the best job in town as long as you're not afraid of getting caught and spending the rest of your life in prison.
And Clay, a Bay Area activist, about his choices around drinking and driving.
That was actually how I learned how to drive.
First, some medical news. An urgent call on the governments of Latin America and the Caribbean to take timely action to ensure the protection of children and pregnant and lactating women against soaring food prices was issued in April by the regional heads of the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, the Pan American Health Organization, the United Nations Development Program, the United Nations Population Fund, the United Nations Children's Fund, and the United Nations World Food Program. Recent data from the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean indicate that continued high food prices could plunge an estimated 10 million people into extreme poverty. Food prices have risen approximately 80% since 2006. Another 10 million people are likely to find themselves reduced to living below the poverty line. Currently, 190 million people are poor and 70 million are extremely poor. 22 million families depend on food aid through conditional cash transfers. An analysis conducted by the World Food Program revealed that people in rural communities purchased 50% less food than they did 18 months ago with the same amount of money. This means their nutritional intake on an already poor diet could be cut by half. During the World Economic Forum on Latin America in Cancun in April, the heads of state of several countries warned that the impact of climbing food and oil prices could undo recent gains in their economies. There was concern that conditions could be creating a perfect storm, which might also affect the stability of their countries. Recent violent riots over high food prices in Haiti left 5 people dead and led to the resignation of Prime Minister Jacques-Edouard Alexis. The joint statement by the agencies stated, "We need to take urgent steps to protect the most vulnerable people for ethical and economic reasons, particularly children who represent the region's future. As a first step, we need broad-based national and international support for emergency food interventions and a strengthening of nutritional safety nets. This must be complemented by in-depth action at the policy level, including strengthening of cash transfer programs to ensure that people have access to the necessary amounts of nutritious food. Actions directed towards sustainable development, including support to small farmers, are also key." At the end of May, the National Science and Technology Council, together with the U.S. Climate Change Science Program, released a scientific assessment of the effects of global climate change on the United States. The report was produced because of a court order forcing the Bush administration to release a fresh summary of federal and independent research. The full report can be found online at www.climatescience.gov. The report does include new estimates of how the poor, elderly, and communities with lagging public health and public works systems will be affected. A 1990 law requires presidents to submit a report to Congress every 4 years, summarizing what is known about impacts of climate change and other global environmental problems on the United States. The last such assessment was undertaken during the Clinton administration and was published in 2000. Industries that opposed restrictions on greenhouse gases attacked that report. During the Bush administration, references to that assessment were deleted from some government reports by political appointees in the White House. Not surprisingly, the report forecasts more drenching rains, parching droughts, and intense hurricanes, and an increased frequency and severity of heat waves due to global warming, leading to more illness and death, particularly among the young, elderly, frail, and poor. The report also suggests that Lyme disease and West Nile virus would likely have expanded ranges due to warming, and that food and waterborne diseases would also increase among susceptible populations. Senator John Kerry, the Massachusetts Democrat who was lead author of the 1990 law, strongly criticized the White House. He states, quote, "The 3-year delay of this report is sadly fitting for an administration that has wasted 7 years denying the real threat of global climate change. In these lost years, we could have slowed global warming and advanced clean energy solutions, but instead America's climate change strategy has been at best rhetorical, not real." End quote. Sergeant Paul Pietruski has served on the police department in Stevens Point, Wisconsin for 18 years. Stevens Point, Wisconsin is the seat of Portage County in central Wisconsin, with a population of around 25,000. I spoke with Sergeant Pietruski in the lunchroom at the police department. Sergeant Pietruski, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me on such short notice. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Can you tell us a little bit about the role of alcohol and drugs in crime and violence and the law?
It's at least 60-70% of our arrest cases throughout the course of the year are alcohol or drug-related. And then 90% of the time our calls after dark are almost all alcohol or drug-related.
That's incredible.
It keeps us busy.
Can you explain a little bit the connection?
People tend to lose impulse control when they've been taking in any type of drug, whether it's alcohol or street drugs or prescription medications. And when they lose impulse control, they do things that they normally would not do. They're arguing with a spouse and they've been drinking, they'll do things that they normally wouldn't do, or walking back from the square, they'll start stealing stuff or damaging stuff, which draws attention of local residents or police right away.
Primarily, the arrests that are occurring are not for the alcohol or drug use. It's for a crime that they're committing while they're intoxicated.
Correct. Most of the time, drunk driving arrests and drug arrests probably only constitute 10-15% of our arrests. It's the other crimes that come from being under the influence, whether it's drug-seeking behavior, they're sober but they're looking to get drugs, or they're shoplifting stuff, or they've been drinking and they get involved in a fight down on the square, or they've been drinking or using and then they get involved in a fight with their spouse. We had an incident a couple of years ago on New Year's Day. People who had been using drugs got involved in a physical altercation and then knives were pulled and a couple of people got stabbed. They ended up getting arrested for physical assault with great bodily harm. Even though they'd been using, what they were arrested for had nothing to do with alcohol or drugs in and of itself.
Using alcohol is not illegal.
Correct. Using alcohol is not illegal. Drinking age is 21. We do see a fair number, probably in the neighborhood of 300 arrests per year for underage use of alcohol. Those are city ordinance violations, not criminal law violations.
And other drugs are illegal. So do you arrest people for using other drugs?
We arrest people for using street drugs as well as prescription medications. It's been a growing trend both in the area and nationwide is the abuse of prescription medications. Portage County has seen 16 prescription drug overdose deaths in the last 2.5 years.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. If people knew that there were 16 heroin overdoses in the last 28 months, they'd all be up in arms. But because it's prescription medications, there isn't the same sense of urgency in the community about that.
So were these suicides?
No, if we can classify it as a suicide, we do not classify it as an unintentional drug overdose.
But how can you arrest somebody for taking prescription drugs?
especially for class one prescription narcotics. Unless it's prescribed to you, you can't be selling it or taking it from friends. Recently, there was a robbery, a daytime robbery at a Walgreens store in Marshfield, where $25,000 worth of oxycodone was taken. And then there was a home robbery up in Merrill recently, where people entered a home and held people at knife point looking for prescription drugs.
That's really incredible.
It's a huge change. When I first started in law enforcement, all the talk was about marijuana, methamphetamine, cocaine, and the growing abuse of prescription medications is a problem that most people, I don't think, realize.
So how much can you get on the street for, say, a tablet of Vicodin?
Depends what area you're in and what the availability is, but it's about $10 for Vicodin.
For one tablet, $10?
Between $5 and $10. Adderall and Ritalin are also commonly abused and sold, and oxycodone, Vicodin, also prescription painkiller patches such as fentanyl or morphine patches have become an increasingly hot item amongst prescription drug abusers.
Are they more expensive?
Yes.
Like what?
That I'm not sure of. We recently had a death in Stevens Point of somebody who was abusing fentanyl patches. Those are powerful pain relievers meant to be used by persons with end-stage cancers.
And if you overdose on a narcotic, basically it stops your drive to breathe, so you just happily stop breathing.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen a lot of that. A 14-year-old boy last fall died at a party put on by a friend of his who brought medication that had been prescribed to his mother after a car accident, morphine pills. A young gentleman took 9 of those and ended up passing away.
Very sad.
Yes, it is. But we still continue to hear about parties where other kids are taking medications. We had one last month where a student at one of our junior highs was handing out some of her medication to her friends. Same city where we had a 14-year-old die less than a year before, but people still take it. People tend to view prescription medications as being safe because they're prescribed. They don't realize that you can overdose and die on those just as you could overdose on cocaine or any other drug.
From the law enforcement angle, what do you think is driving this?
From our point of view, we have to do a much better job educating doctors, dentists, and pharmacists when it comes to people who are seeking drugs. We've had a number of cases where we've had people calling 3 or 4 dentists on a Friday evening complaining of a toothache. I need something to get me through the weekend, and I'll come and see you on Monday morning. Well, they get the prescription for the weekend and never show up on Monday morning. And if you do 3 or 4 dentists on a Friday afternoon, you can get quite a few pills.
I see this in the urgent care all the time. Friday afternoon is the perfect time.
There's been a huge push on for pain control, and these people know that, so the physicians will prescribe medication, and if they use different pharmacies, how do the pharmacies know how much a person's getting? I wish I knew what was driving it. I could probably write a paper and be very rich. Some of the more recent advertising National Public Service announcements have been pointing out the fact that a lot of drug abuse has now become prescription drug abuse, which is very timely. Also locally, we're doing prescription drug drop-off sites twice a year. Normally, it's been at the Lincoln Center here in Stevens Point where people can drop off unused prescription medications, and we collect over 100 pounds twice a year of prescription medications people no longer need.
What do you do with it?
Prescription narcotics are separated out from the other prescriptions. They're put into a solvent and then sent to an incinerator in St. Louis.
Wow, that's interesting.
In order to be incinerated, it has to be a certain class incinerator, and the closest one is in St. Louis. There isn't one in the entire state.
Do you think the laws are too lenient or too strict?
From the amount of prescription abuse that I see, they're too lenient. I'm not sure it's so much a law enforcement matter of controlling that as far as allowing pharmacies and doctors to share information where they can be aware of how much medication is being prescribed.
Certain nationwide pharmacies, you can find out if somebody got whatever prescription filled in Florida and now is getting the same prescription filled a couple days later in Georgia.
Correct. But if you're in Stevens Point, what's to stop you from going to the Shopko pharmacy and then to the Aurora pharmacy down at Cops and then to the Walgreens pharmacy, which aren't in the same network and have no way of knowing?
Do you think part of the problem is also the medical legal system in which it's so easy to sue a doctor for either not giving pain control or giving too much pain medication?
That's certainly played into it. The doctors have been sued quite often recently for not providing enough pain relief. On the other hand, we have the problem of people, you know, getting way too much prescription medication, which they really shouldn't be getting.
And what about street drugs?
We still see a fair amount of street drugs, marijuana especially, some cocaine, methamphetamine. We just did a search warrant last week, one in the city of Stevens Point, one in out in the county where we got 7 ounces of methamphetamine. Marijuana's been around forever. I supervise our school liaison program, and more than half our arrests in the school setting are now for prescription medications, at least as many for prescriptions as there is for street drugs.
Do you think the laws are too strict or too lenient for street drugs?
My point of view, they're too lenient. People have to be held accountable for abusing and misusing prescription medications just like any other drug.
What about the street drugs?
Well, drugs are drugs. If you're abusing prescription drugs, it's just like abusing a street drug. But just because one has a medical label put on it doesn't make it a heck of a lot different. Opium and heroin are drugs that when refined, we give out as morphine and other things.
Do you find that there's any difference in the kinds of crimes people commit on different kinds of drugs?
Not really. I don't see much of a difference in crimes perpetuated by those using the different things. There's crimes that come from the need to find the next hit, whether it's alcohol or anything they'll steal from friends, family, neighbors, whoever, to get the money to pay for their next bottle of alcohol or their next baggie of marijuana or whatever. And it depends upon the individual. I'm sure we've all seen it. Some people are happy drunks and some people are mean, angry drunks. We see more domestic violence associated with alcohol abuse only because there's so much more alcohol abuse. Probably 60% of the time we're making arrests for domestic abuse violations, it's alcohol related. Just because alcohol is an accepted factor in our lives in Wisconsin and in the United States, alcohol is still the most widely abused drug. I don't see that changing.
What about marijuana? People say that, you know, marijuana doesn't really make people do bad things.
I don't know. I've seen enough people who are high act irresponsibly and violently. I just don't buy, whether it's marijuana or alcohol, that there's much of a difference. It just depends upon the individual.
It's not the love drug that they say it is.
No, it's not. People can choose to glamorize using drugs any way they choose. They tend to, just like any other drug, lose their impulse control and do things that if sober or clean, they would never do. Most people, when they're sober, would never consider hitting their spouse.
Do you think that we're locking up too many people for possession or selling or crimes that are not violent or antisocial?
Like I said, most of our arrests are not for using and abusing drugs. It's the other crimes that people commit while under the influence of those drugs. Do I wish there was a way that we could provide treatment that would keep people out of the jail? Absolutely. The jail is not an appropriate place to treat addictions. The root cause of what the crime that they did was their addiction, but they're still involved in an illegal behavior to which there's a consequence. That consequence, unfortunately, is either jail or prison.
So what about all the press about how there's so many people filling up our prisons and taking up our resources just for a simple possession?
Most of the people, the first time that they get arrested, they end up on probation. When it comes to the second or third time, they end up spending some time in jail. And then it goes on to prison, unfortunately. But most of those folks have a number of charges, not only the possession charge, but the theft or the associated burglary or an assault that went along with that. There needs to be a way to provide treatment to those individuals to try and divert them the first or second time that they're involved with the legal system. But once it hits multiple uses, once you're back in jail for the third or fourth time, you've had the opportunity to dry out or become clean and you choose not to, then what do you do?
How are people treated who kill somebody while they're driving while intoxicated?
In Wisconsin, driving while intoxicated, causing death, is a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. People can be put into prison for driving drunk on a first offense if they injure or kill somebody. There is some talk of changing Wisconsin's drunk driving laws to make third offense drunk driving a felony. Currently, it's fifth offense.
Do people actually get convicted and actually do time for doing that?
Absolutely. There's a gentleman I know who's currently serving time down at Columbia that I arrested for a ninth offense, drunk driving.
Had he hurt somebody?
No, driving drunk 9 times. After 5, it's a prison sentence of at least a year.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add about the role of alcohol and drugs in crimes and the law?
As a police officer, the use of alcohol and drugs creates a lot of work. People need to view the use and abuse of alcohol and other drugs as a cost to society. It costs the society a lot of money to employ me and my fellow officers. Not alone, then we have to deal with prison guards and social workers and doctors and nurses. So the cost is enormous. I don't think people realize. But if we didn't have alcohol and drug abuse, my workload would go down by probably at least 60%.
Are you advocating for going dry, prohibition?
We tried prohibition once. We're never going to go back there. People need to realize that you can only use so much before you do things that you wouldn't want to be doing if you were sober. Responsible use is the way it's going to have to be. The people that we end up arresting most of the time for drunk driving test their legal blood alcohol at between a 1.5 and a 2.0. The legal limit's only 0.8.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. So we aren't arresting a lot of people who are barely over the limit. We're arresting people who are really loaded.
How are we as individuals and a society going to get to this point of responsible use?
That's an individual choice that we each have to make. There's been a lot of education done through public service announcements and school programs and all kinds of things. Obviously, just using a law enforcement as a tool hasn't worked. But we can't make it socially acceptable for people to drink too much and get behind the wheel of a car.
Or just simply to get intoxicated.
Correct. If we don't view it as an acceptable social behavior, people wouldn't do it.
You're talking about changing the culture.
And that's a difficult thing, and it's going to take a long time to do that. We can change the laws, and we can punish people who violate the laws, but that hasn't stopped the behavior. It's still socially acceptable to have a lot to drink, and people point and laugh, ha ha, they're drunk or whatever. It needs to be the point, hey, you look like you've had too many, knock it off.
Or to be looked upon with more disdain.
There used to be people felt a sense of shame when they did something wrong, and I think we've lost some of that.
Well, a lot of it starts in high school. It's just so cool in high school to use anything.
And part of that is because it's illegal to do. Drinking age is never going to go back to 18. Was it cool when you were in high school to be the kid who was able to get alcohol? It still is. But it shouldn't be acceptable. A, it's illegal, but more importantly, it's not helpful. It can lead to harmful behaviors that are going to affect you for the rest of your life.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been really very interesting and very informative to get your perspective.
Thank you.
Sergeant Paul Pietreski from the Stevens Point, Wisconsin Police Department.
Dina, tata, takita, tetete, kata, gadi, gena, tatita, 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 ekto, tata, takita, tetete, kata, gadi, gena, tatita, 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 ekto, tata, takita, tetete, kata, gadi, gena, tatita, tatita, tatita.
Detective Ostrowski has served on the Sheriff Department's Drug Task Force in Portage County, Wisconsin for the past 5 years. Portage County has a population of under 70,000. It is in the heart of central Wisconsin. I spoke with Detective Ostrowski in his office next to the jail. Detective Ostrowski, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me on such short notice today. I really appreciate your time.
No problem.
Can you tell me about your role here in the Portage County Sheriff's Department?
I am the case investigator for all of the drug cases conducted at the Sheriff's Department. I work in the Central Wisconsin Drug Task Force, primarily as an undercover agent.
Can you tell me a little bit about your work?
I guess in this county, I coordinate all of the investigations, the stings, the SWAT entries in regards to any drug-related activity, do all the investigating and follow-up surveillance. Normally, I bring a different undercover agent from the task force in just because of people in this county would more than likely know who I am. Our task force consists of 8 counties. if they need undercover work, I go to their county to do it because my face isn't known in another county.
You do a swap for your SWAT.
I guess.
Why would people in this county know you?
I was born and raised in this county. Somebody identifies you during an undercover operation, there's a high chance of it getting probably violent.
This sounds like the kind of stuff that happens in New York City or Chicago, not in Portage County.
I wouldn't compare us to New York or Chicago. It's just kind of on a lesser scale. But of course, they have teams of drug investigators, and we have two in this county.
Can you tell me from your perspective, what is the role of alcohol and drugs in crime and violence?
I know that when I worked on the road, a lot of times the violent, especially the domestic violence calls, a lot of times involved alcohol. Through my training and experience, now this isn't quoting any of the statistics, I don't believe the statistics are accurate, and they rated at about 40%. Just because it's not always reported that somebody's on drugs, or they're arrested and they're taken to jail, or they're arrested and they're forwarded with charges to the district attorney's office, and it's never discovered that they're on drugs. I would estimate that about 2/3 of all the violent crimes in this county are somehow related to drugs or drug activity.
That's a lot.
Yes, it is.
What do you make of that?
The efforts right now of law enforcement, I guess they're headed in the right direction, but recent cuts in federal funding and local funding kind of restricts drug enforcement efforts.
Do you think people change their behaviors based on their fear of getting caught?
Once somebody is on drugs, they may not be so concerned about the laws and getting caught. I think they're probably more concerned about where they're going to get their next high from. But initially, I think people may be concerned about the laws and getting caught. That's not to say that the people that aren't concerned about getting caught, once they get caught, that's sometimes what makes them realize that they're going down the wrong road.
So do you think that our law enforcement efforts are actually helping our drug problem in our society?
Yeah, I think they are. I do think that efforts prior to addiction and, say, clinics that treat an addiction may help as well. Unfortunately, this community is overrun with drugs. There's more drugs than people think around here. I worked the road for 5.5 years in central Wisconsin, and then I came to the drug unit, and I was amazed at how much and how easy it is to get drugs. Unfortunately, I don't think everyone is going to be offered that opportunity to get some sort of help. On the other end of the spectrum, there also comes a time and place where if they are addicted and they're committing these crimes, something needs to be done. You can't just let them do it, you know.
Are people really willing to access addiction treatment or rehabilitation programs prior to getting in trouble with the law?
I don't believe so. Most of them won't.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. I would say that they're in denial that they have a problem. And once they get away with it long enough, they think they can keep getting away with it until they get caught by law enforcement. I think some of them get into it because it's lucrative too around here.
You mean the selling angle of it?
Yes, ma'am.
So does selling always go with using?
Not always.
Do you think there's any difference in the types of crimes people commit based on the types of drugs they use?
In Portage County, most of them are property crimes that we see as a direct result of people needing money to purchase drugs. We don't see the high, you know, the murders or the substantial batteries in regards to one drug group battling with another drug group or somebody strong-arming someone for a drug debt or anything like that. On occasion, we do see that, but not always.
When you say one drug group versus another drug group, are you referring to, what are you referring to?
A drug entity, like some sort of drug cartel or a group of people that facilitates some sort of drug operation for profit.
We have those in Portage County?
Yes, ma'am.
And they compete with each other?
We don't see that as much here, and I don't think that they're to the level where it constitutes somebody harming somebody else. There's enough money to go around, you might say.
What do you think the cause is of all this prevalence of drug use and abuse and selling and buying and the whole drug industry, from your perspective?
From my perspective, in Portage County, I guess the main reason it's here is because it's a business. People can make a lot of money. I've done investigations where people have made money beyond you or I will ever make in a short amount of time. That's from the dealer standpoint. The user standpoint, I guess, if it's just there, some people just like to get high. You talk to people and you ask them. They asked them what it feels like, why they do it, and they just said, just like somebody that drinks alcohol or maybe somebody that's addicted to golf or whatever, they just can't get enough of it. I don't know.
It's just an addiction like any other. It's starting to become the easiest buck in town all over the world.
Dealers are good at distributing it. They get people hooked on stuff, and then they start charging them.
What's the real harm if people want to use and people want to sell it to them? And what's the real harm to our society?
Goes back on people stealing, I guess, stealing your property, my property. Innocent people are affected by this as well. The money that goes into treatment facilities because people are addicted to drugs, the money that goes into investigating these crimes, the violent crimes, that's the real harm. People get killed because of it as well.
What if we just made drugs legal and then that would take out a lot of the criminal aspect of it?
People would still make money.
Yeah, nothing wrong with making money, right? People are making money selling cars too.
Yeah, but the people that are high on drugs, majority of the people that I deal with tend to not have a job. They have to get the money somehow. See people's lives, their personal hygiene, when they get addicted to this stuff, just everything. Their children go to the side, everything gets tossed to the side.
But if it was legal, maybe the price would come down.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, you know, let's go back to the old West and take the law into our old hands, I guess.
This is a little bit of a serious question. If drugs were made legal, presumably it would be easier to get them, and presumably the price would actually come down, and one might see a change in the criminal aspects of it.
It's a good question, and a lot of people have asked me that, including some of my friends and family members. If the price went down, it'd be easier to get, be more of it around, where you'd save money. On the other end, you'd probably be spending that amount as well on addiction treatment. It's all right for somebody to make their own decision in regards to using drugs, and if it's cheap, to throw their own life away, I guess you might say. But what about the children that are involved with, who's going to take care of them? That costs money to put them into placement, get them, you know, on the right road.
We're paying those costs anyways right now, even while it's illegal.
Yeah, I guess. I think it would probably be more prevalent if it's here and it's all over. I don't know.
So you think that the illegality of drugs actually deters people from using?
I didn't say that. I said that where you're spending money now, you may not be spending money later if they were legal, but you'd be still be spending the money somewhere. Alcohol was illegal once as well. And now you can get it anywhere you want, right? But how much money do we spend on alcohol treatment, people that get killed in car accidents, children that get displaced because of alcohol, people that lose their jobs and need assistance from the people that actually do work, that type of stuff.
Was it better when alcohol was illegal?
I don't know, but I could just say that now it is illegal and it's still a huge problem.
You mean alcohol is legal? And
it's still legal and it's still a huge problem. Probably the largest problem on any drug, so.
What do you think our best hope is for the future of our society and for the individuals involved in drug and alcohol abuse?
I think there needs to be some sort of enforcement and regulation on it, just like alcohol. The whole legal and illegal thing, it's up to people beyond me. But as far as the war on drugs go, my saying is that we've already lost the war. We're just keeping them honest now. So.
Keeping who honest?
The drug dealers.
How do we keep them honest?
You know, so they can't do it out in broad daylight on the streets of Porter's County anyways. What we're capable of here, we don't have enough help. You know, we're fighting a losing battle.
Does it make it harder for you to catch them if they can't do it out in broad daylight on the streets of Portage County?
I guess we're just catching the more courageous ones, like do it more blatantly.
What do you mean we're losing the war on drugs?
I just like to say that because it's overwhelming here. It's basically two investigators that investigate drugs in Portage County, one at the Sheriff's Department and one at the Stevens Point Police Department. So it's one in three complaints gets investigated.
So you're saying we need more of the war on drugs?
In Portage County, I believe that if you have more help on the enforcement end, I think we could probably get a little bit better of a grasp on it than we have now.
Do you think it would make a big difference in the culture of drug use and abuse in Portage County?
I think it may.
What do you think about the war on drugs in general?
When you get back to the philosophy of just making it legal, I think, look at how it is in Mexico right now. People just killing people. It's all about money down there, and it's pretty much legal down there.
So you're saying that in Mexico, people are killing each other left and right for drugs?
Yeah, to make money on drugs, there's certain cartels that make more money. And if one cartel invades another cartel's territory, you know, police officers and whoever's with them get killed.
If we had it legal, we could give people licenses, we could regulate it, we could kind of keep track of, you know, inventories and...
People that are on cocaine, once they take this much, then they need this much, then they need this much, then they need this much. They're not capable of even living a productive life unless they don't have cocaine. And then they start jonesing, or they need that next high, so then they commit a crime. You're saying just give it to them.
I'm presenting it as a point of view to see what your point of view is.
I don't think that it's a very large obstacle that we have, but I think that would make things a lot worse in this country. I believe in today's society, there's probably people that would try drugs that would probably be drug addicts if it was available, if they had the opportunity to buy it at a reasonable price. That may be preventing them from actually trying the drug. Well, you know, drugs are bad. You can get in trouble for it. You can get arrested for it. I don't have the money to pay for it. If none of those circumstances were in front of them, I think that you'd probably have a bigger problem, because through my training experience, cocaine addicts, heroin addicts, even marijuana addicts, prescription drug addicts that we're seeing a lot more of, they cannot function as a productive person in society. Once they're addicts, they're not real concerned about what happens to them as long as they get that drug. And I think the laws being the way they are, that may prevent, you know, that person that's on the edge, or that person that might try it and then eventually become addicted to it. And in the long run, I think the treatment of these addicts and the repercussions of their addiction, not being able to take care of their families, their kids, causing accidents, you know, overdoses, stuff like that, I think that would probably cost us as much money as the enforcement ends. So
do you think people start off with alcohol, tobacco, marijuana? What's the lead point for people to get into drugs?
You know, the tobacco and marijuana, in my 4 years of experience, I've never met a cocaine dealer, a methamphetamine cook dealer, a marijuana dealer, heroin dealer, crack dealer, you name it, that hasn't started out smoking marijuana when they're a teenager or dealing marijuana. It truly is the gateway drug.
Even more so than alcohol?
I guess you could consider alcohol right along with marijuana as a gateway drug, yeah.
Or is alcohol the gateway drug to marijuana?
It may be. I've never considered that. Kids will experiment with alcohol before they probably experiment with marijuana.
Would it be useful to put stricter laws on the use of alcohol?
I think it probably would be.
What could you imagine would be useful or enforceable or actually effective?
I think the enforcement on alcohol as is, if they keep up with the strict laws that they have now, I think sooner or later it's going to have a positive effect.
What are the strict laws now?
Lowering the breath alcohol content for the intoxicated driver, so people aren't able to drink as much before they consider themselves intoxicated, I guess. And the laws as far as intoxicated driving, getting your license revoked, insurance going up, it's real costly.
But people never think about that when they get into their car after they've been drinking.
Yeah, I guess we're still arresting drunk drivers, so... I think the laws, them tightening up the laws are probably, I think they're helping. People are more conscious, I think.
What about raising prices on alcohol or having dry hours?
I think that would work. I know people that live in the southern states, the dry states or dry counties, and they don't have alcohol-related crimes or problems down there.
You think it would work in Wisconsin?
I don't know. He'd probably have a tough time getting that passed. I think he'd be better maybe raising the price or taxing it or something like that.
We have a pretty strong alcohol culture, but we also have a pretty strong tavern lobby.
I guess you're asking the wrong person if I wouldn't have a problem if they banned it completely.
Great. So what's our hope? What's your hope?
I think in Portage County, we just do what we can. Hopefully we can get more enforcement, more help on the federal funding. There was a time in this county when officers could work quite a bit of hours on drug enforcement. Now I'm the only officer that can do that, and my hours are limited. Hopefully sooner or later our economy rebounds and we can get back to the funding that we were at one time.
Seems like also if our economy was better, then maybe people wouldn't need to resort to selling drugs as a means of living. Or it probably will still be the best job in town.
I think it would probably still be the best job in town as long as you're not afraid of getting caught spending the rest of your life in prison.
Great. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Detective Ostrowski from the Sheriff Department's Drug Task Force in Portage County, Wisconsin.
Tina, that it got a gaddy geneta, 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 got a gaddy geneta, got a gaddy geneta, da da, da da, da.
Clay is an activist from New York City, now living in the Bay Area and working in landscape and construction. He generously shares his experiences and choices around driving while intoxicated. Clay, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to talk to me.
Right on.
Clay, are you addicted to any substances?
I guess some people would say that I am.
Do you say that you are?
I would have to admit that I am, yes.
Can you tell me about your experience with those substances?
My first beer, I had a couple of older brothers, and we snuck a beer out of my grandfather's cooler when we were five.
And that 5 years old?
5 years old, 5 years old. I think the first cigarette I had, I was like maybe about five, and that was sneaking tobacco out of dad's tobacco pouch.
You smoked it?
I mean, I smoked a puff and coughed like crazy. We all did. And then I think I left it alone. I think maybe when I was 10, we were trying to be bad kids. And then that was like the first time I bought cigarettes and bought beer.
First of all, I want to ask you how old your brothers were.
One brother was 2 years older than me and one was 5 years older than me.
So what's the allure at age 10 for being a bad kid?
I think the allure is like when you realize that stuff is really messed up with the world and you're treated badly by the world, you're treated badly by your own family. It's like kind of a way of saying, I don't want to be a part of this. I want to do something else completely. I can't win within this thing, so I'm going to step out.
Can you tell me about being 10 and realizing that the world is not how you thought it should be or want it to be?
I mean, at 10, I don't think I really had like a clear position on it. I mean, this is like me looking back afterwards and saying this. Definitely just seeing that it's a white world. Like, it's not a fair world. It's not a just world. Sometimes you can get blamed for stuff that you didn't do. And sometimes when you do stuff that you deserve to get some credit for, you don't get it. Somebody else gets it. Just seeing those things all the time, man.
And you were seeing that at age 10?
I mean, you definitely pick up on, like, who's a cool kid, who gets the approval from the teachers. Yeah, I think you start to see that stuff. Yeah.
Using tobacco or alcohol clearly wasn't going to get you the approval that you were seeking.
It's being rebellious. Instead of taking their way, I'm going to make my own way. I think that's some of it.
But this other way is actually just another way. It's some other person's way or some other segment's way. It's not actually your own way.
It's not just some other person's way. It's like a way that's carefully crafted to make sure you fall into this hole, this abyss that you never climb out, that you become an addict. It's a path that's set up for you because once you start smoking cigarettes for a little bit of time, you quickly get addicted. And the same thing with the alcohol. It's like if you're missing a way out, they offer you this stuff. And it's really easy to fall into. And once you fall into it, it's hard to get out of. Especially if stuff has happened to you, life has happened to you in a painful way and you don't know how to deal with it. Like I had a brother who died at an early age and I never got over it. That's really when I got deeper into this stuff. Before then I was just kind of like messing around and being rebellious, but that's when I started like falling down into it. And I think a lot of folks are carrying around in this society a lot of pain and that's why you fall into it. It's like you don't see any other way out. At least let me get something to help me deal with this.
How old were you when your brother died?
I was 12.
And so that's when you started using what more heavily?
I kind of like went real internal for a number of years, just isolated myself. And when I came out of that was when I really started smoking and drinking and stuff like that.
If you were in charge of the world and you saw people in pain and suffering and they didn't know how to deal with it, what would you offer besides drugs and alcohol?
Oh, that's a great question. And I don't have a specific answer on the top of my head, but I'd offer something else besides drug and alcohol. I mean, I think there's two things. I think there's necessary pain or like kind of pain that happens out of life, like when you give birth or when you're born or when you scrape your knee when you're learning how to walk or you get heartbroken for the first time. And it's like that's just kind of what you need to do to grow. For that kind of pain, I guess you help people see, well, that's what happens. I mean, any kind of pain, I guess that's helpful to know that there are other people that are also suffering. So being in a community of folks who suffer, I think that's a good thing. So then also then there's this unnecessary pain. And so I'd say get rid of the unnecessary pain. Starving children, give them food. People need health care, give them the opportunity to get some good health care. People need education, give them education. People who need therapy, give them therapy.
People who need money, give them money.
Yeah, anything that people need to fulfill the potential of who they are should be given to them. And when you don't have the ability to fulfill that potential is when you suffer.
Who should give it to us?
We should. We're the ones who have all the resources and all the power and always have, but they've convinced us to believe their illusion that they're running stuff.
Who's they?
The big power brokers in every country, on every television set, the big corporations who convince us that their laws count.
Tell me about your unnecessary pain.
My unnecessary pain is somebody else's unnecessary pain. It was my brother's unnecessary pain. It was like his suffering that he went through. Part of it was because we lived in a family where we didn't ever have enough money. And a dad who was violent because he had a father who was also messed up. And these people passed it down. I know there's this group now called, I think, Generation 5. And they're talking about it takes at least 5 generations for trauma to be worked out of the family if we do our best. And perhaps it takes more if we don't do our best. I mean, you ask any kid what they're going to grow up and be. Nobody says, oh, I'm going to be a messed up whatever it is. I want to kill other people or take their money, cause children to starve around the world or anything like this. Everybody wants to be a good person. We just don't really have that chance sometimes or something.
Well, sometimes the best job in town is pushing drugs, and pushing drugs oftentimes means using drugs, testing your goods.
Yeah, when you're given very little options, it is. By the nature of the way the society is set up, you are part of the substructure. You are underneath everything that's going on. That's a very lucrative piece of the substructure is the drugs and the prostitution and whatever else you want to think of that's like mean, nasty, that's out there. Yeah.
It seems like you're very aware of the unnecessary pain that you've been through. How is that awareness factor into your current patterns of use?
Wow. I don't know.
What I mean is that oftentimes people who are suffering and who have pain and who want to alleviate the pain turn to substances. It's a temporary relief and the pain doesn't really ever go away just by using. You seem to be very aware of the pain and the motive for at least starting to use. Sometimes when people become more aware of their motive, it affects how they end up using.
Something I've struggled with my entire life is trying to live in a way where things will get better. Part of the hard thing of experiencing trauma that you never really get to grow through is that you're always stuck in it. Even though you can see the path out, you can't get there. It's complex because there's so many things that are necessary to be successful once you fall off balance. And most of us don't have the resources to be able to do that. So if you're like rich and white and a Hollywood star, then you sign up for some clinic and then you're clean in 3 weeks and you got a new brand new album out and you can talk about your hardship and suffering when you're addicted for this little bit of time. And if you're not from that jet set or have a lot of resources, you don't have the time to like just back up out of life and take care of your stuff. Like I've done a lot of reading and studying up to try and make my life better, especially around stuff that directly relates to me. So I know like one of the things that I was reading one time was talking about cigarette smokers, for example, are self-medicating for depression. So it's harder to get out of it. You feel horrible, and it's difficult to hold down a 9-to-5 if you're trying to get off that stuff.
So what I hear you saying is that you have some idea that you want to come out of using, but you don't really know how, or you don't feel like you have the time or the money or the access to the resources to help you quit.
Wow, now you're really putting it to me there. I mean, I guess I do. On some ways, it's just as simple as saying that you're going to do it, right? You just have to decide to. Very hard to live with.
Part of it may be that you may have to decide to feel your pain.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's one of the things that always surprised me every single time that I quit. And I've tried to quit smoking cigarettes maybe 25 times in my life. The joke is with cigarette smokers is like, oh, yeah, quitting is easy. I've done it 25 times. You know, but it snatches you back up again. But every single time that I quit, it always catches me by surprise that I cry more than I ever cry. I expect anxiety and nervous and irritable and all this kind of stuff. But the crying always catches me by surprise. I hurt inside. I don't want to hurt. And there's nobody there to help me not hurt. So I will take care of my hurt myself with this alcohol and this cigarette and this joint and whatever else.
Perhaps I'm going to offer this to you. The only way for the hurt to, or one of the ways for the hurt to resolve itself is to actually just be felt.
I mean, I agree with that 100%. It's just always harder to do than to say.
I want to ask you a somewhat sensitive question, since you've been using since a very tender age, and seems like you may have even started using before you learned how to drive. Have you ever driven while intoxicated?
Oh, definitely.
Can you tell me about that experience?
That was actually how I learned how to drive. I had a friend, we would get stoned in New York City on the highways, and he would say, just pretend all the other cars are going 0 miles an hour and you're going 20. I learned to drive real well, but it was dangerous as and so we were real lucky.
In high school or junior high, you never had these, you know, scary movies where they show you about, you know, drunk drivers, car wrecks and the messes and not wearing your seatbelt and all that. You never saw any of those movies?
Maybe I did. But the same way that I saw the videos about STDs and the videos about pregnancy and the videos about whatever. And as a young kid, you think you're pretty invulnerable.
So when you were driving stoned, you never had any thought enter your mind that something bad could happen to you or something bad could happen to somebody else?
Well, I mean, not until I was in this car accident. I wasn't driving, luckily. I was stoned, but the guy who was driving wasn't stoned. And that really made me consider that I wasn't invulnerable and immortal.
What happened in the car accident?
The guy was driving. He was driving a little bit too fast. We were speeding through traffic, and there was an old man who happened to be not really paying attention as we were pulling into a lane, changing lanes, and he pulled into that same lane. And the guy who was driving was young and inexperienced, and so he hit the brakes, and the car skidded out. We hit this middle divider, and the car popped up, and when we landed back down, we were shooting out across traffic, across a little divider, a couple lanes of oncoming traffic, and luckily we weren't hit there. The bumper got smashed up to the dashboard. We broke out that concrete wall divider stuff that they have. Luckily, the axle of the car broke out, so it pinned the car to the ground. I smashed a windshield with my face. The doors got ripped off, and ambulances came eventually. And they were really surprised that any of us made it. At first, you don't really, you don't feel anything. And then the blood started coming. And then there was just pain like I can't even describe. Both the two other guys who were in the car were knocked out, so I thought they were dead. I never prayed so hard in my life. I prayed to God to not let me die for my mom's sake. She had just had a bunch of people die on her, including my brother. And so I was like, you can't let me die because it's going to mess her up. And I promised God at that time, I was like, if you let me live, I'll quit smoking and drinking. Be a good boy till the end of my days.
Well, you're living.
I'm living, and I still haven't been a good boy.
That sounds like a pretty harrowing experience. And you are very lucky. It does sound like you really got lucky. Did you ever drive intoxicated after that experience?
Yes, many times.
Tell me your thought process or feeling process about those experiences, or those decisions.
When you're under the influence of these different substances, you feel like you have control. You always feel like, I can do this. And of course, this is my biased opinion, but I think I'm a pretty good driver, even under influences. Like, I'm able to control my desire to speed and be reckless and drive more conservatively than I normally would. And then some of it might also be like some suicidal tendencies. Why do you engage in these kind of behaviors which are potentially self-destructive? You know what it is, and still you're doing it. Doesn't make sense on some level.
I can understand what you're saying when you're using and you know that it has harmful effects on your mind and your body. What I'm curious about is if there's any concern for the potential impact on someone else, some innocent person, when you choose to drive under the influence.
Yeah, well, there's definitely concern.
But not enough of a concern to choose a different option for getting home.
I think the Bay Area is really terrible at this because it has a crappy public transit system. But one of the things I've been trying to do recently is to ride my bicycle, because that way at least I won't hurt somebody else.
Did you do the same thing when you were living in New York?
No, I never did, because New York has a great public transit. So the subway runs all over, it's cheap, and it runs all night long. So you could be drunk out of your head and end up on the subway and find your way back home. I don't know why we don't have stuff like that all over the place. It just makes sense. It would be cheaper and safer for everybody.
If we had a better public transportation system, you wouldn't take your car out to the bars.
Ever, ever, ever. Ever, ever.
Do you think that other drivers also think that they're able to control how they drive, even while they're under the influence?
I think everybody does. Everybody who's on the road, including the elderly and the teenagers, thinks that they can drive and they can handle what's coming up.
And you don't think that people are worried at all about getting caught or about being pulled over by the police?
I think everybody thinks about that all the time. It's a risk assessment. So you play and you say, okay, well, is it worth it? Is it worth it? It's like, we're always doing that. It's always a percentage you're playing. Sometimes you're incorrect and sometimes you're correct.
In terms of a deterrent, something that would make you choose not to drive drunk, what would you rank as the highest? The risk of getting caught, the risk of hurting yourself, or the risk of hurting someone else?
I think this is exactly the problem. When we learn to solve problems with negatives, it's never going to work. We're not going to solve the solution by putting out a negative. We're going to put out a positive. So we don't need to deter people from drinking and driving. We just got to offer a better solution, which would be a kick butt public transit system, which got people everywhere they needed to go, that was affordable for people and ran all night long and, you know, it was safe. People would offer it because everybody wants to live a long life. Everyone wants to do the best thing always.
Very well said.
And we have so many resources. We could make the perfect world if we wanted to. We could make this heaven. But instead, we're throwing money at the wrong things.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would. Maybe 2.5 years ago, I went through a whole bunch of stuff again. And I was knocked down lower than I've ever been knocked down in my life. That dark night of the soul. And I hope I don't get another darker night. Because I've gone through several already. This was the worst of them yet. So the solution is try and catch it quick. Fix your stuff up early on. Otherwise, you make it much, much harder for you to get out of that. But I experienced this depression, and it humbled me once again. I mean, when you can't even make it out of bed, you can't think about how to make things right. We lack compassion for each other's suffering, though we all suffer. And so, we're quick to make these really harsh judgments, which don't help at all. We all deserve to fulfill our potential. And the world would be so beautiful if we could. It could be heaven on earth. Heaven.
Thank you, Clay. Really appreciate you sharing your experiences with us today. Clay, garden artist and activist in the Bay Area.
Dina, Dina, datete kata gadi gene, datete kata gadi gene, takata gadi gene, da 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 kata da 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 kata da 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 da.
Our concluding poem. I am a junkie too. Every day I need my fix. Every day I dose. A couple of times a day, at least. And if I don't get it, oh, the craving, the belly cramps, the lightheadedness, the shaky anxiety and irritability make me drop everything in search of my next hit. It becomes the main priority for the moment until the need is satisfied. But then the craving returns. In fact, my whole life revolves around this habit. I will do almost any kind of work in order to support my habit. I haven't resorted to stealing yet, but if push came to shove, I might. I would, for food. Neijing Now was written, edited, recorded, and produced by Dr. Jayshree Chander. Website setup and design, Srinivas Pakanati and Dirk Polson. Tabla and manjira played by Jayasi. Bass guitar by Pedro Ordonez. Drum set by G.C. Garcia. Compositions from Pandit Swapan Chaudhary. Concluding poem written by Jayasi. Distributed by Gypsy Jace Productions. Found at gypsyjace.net. gypsyjace.net. You can find us on the web at neijingnow.org. neijingnow.org.